The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, if you thought the Monday Night Wars between WWE and WCW was a big rivalry, they ain't got nothing on Marvel versus DC. That's right. This rivalry started over half a century ago and began about comic books. And it's now evolved to movies. That's right. Marvel Comics versus DC Comics. My guest today, Reed Tucker, wrote a great book about it. It's called Slugfest, Inside the Epic 50-Year Battle Between Marvel and DC. And wait till you hear some of his stories. Incredible stuff about insider spying, undercutting prices on comics, and stealing artists and writers too. He talked to some of the legendary players from both companies and unearthed all sorts of ridiculous stuff, cool stuff, stuff you're going to need to know if you love comics, even if you don't. Of course, we talk about our favorite comics and our favorite characters, who's the most popular, which one generates the most money in merch and sales, and what it took for Marvel to overtake DC Comics and then dominate the movie box office as well. Reed's got some theories on why DC is struggling on the big screen, what makes Marvel work so well, and what the future may hold for both. So let's start talking Batman, Spider-Man, Iron Man, Aquaman, X-Men, and even some obscure characters like Wonder Man and Power Man. That's a good one, Power Man. Find out what happened to the comic book heyday and whether there will ever be another iconic comic book character introduced in our lifetime. It's a great show. So here we go with Reed Tucker. It's the Marvel versus DC Mega War, and it starts now. Right, so I'm here. It's always great meeting a strange man in a hotel room, isn't it?
Yeah, nothing suspicious here at all. Nothing yeah. suspicious. I just knock on the door.
I'm going to Weinstein you now.
Yeah, right. Hey, I may do it.
Yeah. I'm here with Reed Tucker, who has written a great book, which is something I'm very interested in, and I know a lot about, but not a lot about. It's called Slugfest, and it's about the ongoing war or rivalry between DC and Marvel Comics. First off, why did you decide to delve so deeply into this?
Yeah, well, for one, nobody else had done it, which is crazy.
It's interesting.
Exactly. It's one of those ideas that's so obvious. You're like, well, somebody must have done it, and then you look, and they haven't done it. So, and right now, it seems like with the movies, you know, it's just top of mind for everyone. It's like it's moved from the comic book stores, and now it's like a multi-billion-dollar business. So I thought, you know, somebody needs to write about this. And I looked into the history, and there's all kinds of weird stories and like petty infighting between the two companies going back. So I thought it made a good topic for a book.
It's interesting because there's something that you said in one of the interviews that I read, how you say there's no other, brands that there's two.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah,
and this
exactly.
This is kind of the only other example
right.
of that.
Which is crazy. And I know you read comic books, you said, growing up. It's amazing that no other company or no other superheroes can really get a foothold. It's like these two companies have basically ruled the industry since they started in the 30s. And then since the 60s, they've been really the only two games in town. So that's crazy to me. And now with the movies, you know, they're
it's
it,
a whole
really.
New level, right?
Yeah, it's a whole new level.
There was always little upstart companies that tried to come in and out.
That's right.
Is it kind of like one of those things, like for example, in wrestling, if it's not WWE, it's very hard to sell it, because when people think wrestling, they think WWE.
Right, right.
When you think comics, you think Marvel, DC.
Right, so. And at this point, they're so established, I don't know if anyone's going to be able to come along and bring out a new superhero that anyone cares about.
Who is the third, if you had to pick? Is there a third, even a distant third?
I mean, you know, Image Comics, it publishes a lot of good stuff. I think they have about 10% of the market, but they don't really have any marquee superheroes. They publish creator-owned stuff from people it's really nice, diverse. Line of comics.
But it's really based much like, you know, Mexican wrestling or Saturday Night Live, where you have to have the top star, that character that really clicks.
Yeah, exactly.
And in comics, though, they live forever because we're still talking to this day about Superman and Batman and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It'll be a Flash and all these guys.
Yeah, exactly. It's a legacy business. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of reasons that people are so interested in Batman and Superman is because they're so old, you know, that everyone grew up with them and they have this real history that it's nice to kind of delve into. So, yeah, I think it's going to stay this way basically forever.
Do you remember Gold Key comics?
Yeah, I do remember those. Did you really?
That's my third.
Those are from the 50s, right?
Kind of like they would take it, but they're more like cartoon, like Donald Duck and those type of things. When I was a kid, I had a lot of Gold Key. They must have been readily available or something like that.
Were you buying them or was somebody else giving them to you?
Yeah, no, okay. Comics, like, I'm not sure how old are you?
I'm 44.
Okay, so we're almost the same age. Yeah. I'm 47. So back in those days, comics were very accessible.
Right.
You would go to the drugstore, buy them off the rack. I remember every time I got sick, you'd get a couple comic books. I'd be so excited here, go on the plane. But it was more along the lines of you just kind of read whatever was available.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because sometimes you go to the drugstore and they don't have a huge selection.
Exactly.
So you're like, well, I guess I'll get Wonder Woman or Green Lantern or whatever.
It wasn't like you go to a comic book shop per se.
Right.
Like you said, go to the drugstore and whatever they had, you would get.
Do you remember the first comic you ever bought?
Well, another one I was going to say was I was a big Archie Comics fan.
Okay.
And they would have the digests, and they would come out like on the 22nd of every month. And I remember waiting it's the 19th. There's only two more days till the digest comes out. I will say this. I don't remember the first comic, but I do remember that I left two comics on a plane once, and I was so devastated. But by total circumstance, when I got on the next plane, someone had left two comics in their area.
It's like paying it forward.
So I remember that one of them was Valkyrie.
Ooh, what's that? Is it a Marvel?
I think it's Marvel. Okay. Like one of those very obscure, I'm sure somebody out there at Talk is Jericho, let me know where Valkyrie was involved. But the other one was... my aunt had a cabin, and there was an actual mint condition copy of Amazing Spider-Man number 17.
What?
That must have ended up there because it was like a family cabin that had been around for dozens and dozens and dozens of years. So someone must have bought it. And I remember, I still have it. Like it was mint, box and board it back in the day is what you did.
Amazing,
right? How about you?
The first one I ever bought. The first one I ever bought, I think, was like Green Lantern 196.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, you know, back in the day, they used to give away comic books in cereal boxes. I don't know if you remember that post, like Honeycomb. You'd open up Honeycomb and you'd dig to the bottom of the box and there'd be like a Batman comic in there, like covered in the cereal dust.
Was it a small one or a big one?
I remember it was a small one. You remember those? Yeah.
It comes in a plastic
Exactly.
Thing.
Yeah. So I looked on eBay a couple months ago to see what that was. And they're, you know, they sell them now. So I think it was from 1979 post cereal. So I would have been about 6 years old. That's the first one I can really remember getting and reading and being really excited about.
Too, there was Treasuries. Remember those, the big comics?
Oh, yeah.
And they would have like the one that was Superman versus Muhammad Ali.
You have that one?
I have that one.
That's amazing. And that cover's amazing.
I talked with Kevin Smith about that. You can see there's Farrah Fawcett and there's, Johnny Carson, all the big stars of the day.
Stan Lee,
on the cover of a DC.
Yes.
It's so funny.
It's beautiful.
So let's talk about this. Like, and I'm sure there's a lot to get into. But where did this rivalry all start? And give us a brief kind of history on which one was first? How did it even begin?
Yeah, so DC was first, but only by a couple years, which is not something I think most people know, is that Marvel also started in the 1930s. DC really kicked things off when they published Superman. And so after Superman came out in 1938, there was like this gold rush where all these other publishers tried to jump in on the whole superhero game. And Marvel was one of them. So Marvel was kind of more of a fly-by-night publisher. And they published Marvel Comics #1. They introduced the Submariner and the Human Torch. Those were their first superheroes. But then superheroes kind of fell out of favor. DC kept publishing superheroes, and it wasn't until the 60s Stan Lee, Jack Kirby came along, and they introduced all those Marvel characters that we know of now. You know,
Stan Lee, obviously, he's kind of the iconic, you know, dude, but he really did kind of take control of, was he kind of the CEO of Marvel Comics, or was he just, some guys get credit when maybe it wasn't necessarily the case.
Yeah, it depends on who you talk to. There's a lot of debate in the comic book world about who did what, and Stan Lee is a very good self-promoter. He's very good with media, and so I think there's a lot of hurt feelings among people he worked with as far as he thinks that they're hogging the credit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you talk to some people who are real Jack Kirby fans, and they'll say he did everything. You'll talk to Stan Lee fans, and they'll say he did everything.
Does Jack Kirby was the artist or the writer?
He was the artist, right. But you know, he claims Stan Lee would just give him basically a very short synopsis of, okay, the Fantastic Four fight the Mole Man, and then it would be up to Jack Kirby to really lay out everything, figure out the pacing, figure out the plot points, bring it back. Stan Lee would dialogue it. So, you know, I don't know. I think that they both contributed a whole lot to Marvel.
Just that Stan, like I said, sometimes guys just become the icon and.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he was co-writing a lot of it, but he's the guy that gets the credit.
Exactly. Right? And I do think he had this vision for taking comics in a new direction. So, you know, what DC had been doing prior to the 60s was these comics were very much aimed at children. You know, Batman was, it was just very juvenile kind of stuff.
It was the giant props.
Yes, exactly. You know, the giant penny in his cave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the giant museum where there's a giant pencil. And
right. You know,
all the time.
Yeah. So if you look at some of the stuff they were doing in the 50s, it's just kind of ridiculous stuff.
Bob Kane,
yeah, also a ridiculous man. But then Marvel came along in the 60s, you know, with Fantastic Four and Spider-Man, and they really put a new, more mature spin on these superheroes and made them more human. You know, I'm sure people have heard this story a million times. So, but you know, so then they kind of caught DC a little bit flat-footed. Marvel started really busting out with sales in the early 60s, and then
what caught, like, what, why would the sales have increased? Was there a certain character or just the whole vibe of the comics?
I think just the whole vibe. You know, the 60s came along. There was a different time. Anti-heroes were kind of in fashion. And also Marvel was able to attract a whole group of readers that really weren't reading comics before. You know, a bit older readers, some college students, maybe even some adults. These are not readers that DC was getting before. They were mostly focusing on, you know, 8 to 12-year-old children. And so when Marvel sales really started busting out, DC knew what Marvel sales were doing because they were distributing the comics, and so they would look at it and they didn't really understand what was going on. So it took them a few years to figure out, oh, Marvel's doing something different. And by then, it was almost too late for them to change. And so they spent the 70s and some of the 80s clumsily trying to catch up to what Marvel was doing by kind of changing their style. And they can't ever really do it. And even to this day, you know, you see with the movies that they're still trying to figure out a way to make Superman appeal to a modern audience. And, you know, they've got this version that Zack Snyder's done that's very dark. And I'm not sure that's kind of the way to really present Superman. You know?
It's interesting because I always found, and just to kind of set the tone, mm-hmm. we mentioned I was a big comic kid when I was the 70s and 80s.
You know,
Box and Board and the comic book guide to, what's the pricing guide? The comic book pricing guide. We get that every year for Christmas. I was always a DC guy.
Yeah.
And I'm really not sure the reason why. Actually, I was, Batman was my guy. Like Bob Kane, they also talk about Digest, which was like small, kind of novel sized comics.
Yeah.
They put out this series of all 50s Batman. So I read all the 50s Batman, obviously not the originals. But I really liked the whole concept of Batman. But then it seemed that Marvel was always kind of cooler, especially when you talk about the 60s. There was a Spider-Man cartoon that came out around that time. They used to show in Canada like every day. But it was always kind of trippy, and they'd always go like to dance clubs and like there'd be people dancing and drinking. And like it just seemed like it was a much cooler universe than DC's universe was.
Yeah, and in part because it was developed mostly in the 60s. You know, there were some heroes, Captain America and the Human Torch, that were developed before then, but it's mostly that Marvel's heroes have a much more modern sensibility, and I think that carries over to this day where DC does not. And like you said, they're much less cool. They're kind of square, you know. Batman, I agree with you. I think he was the coolest DC hero because he's probably the closest to a Marvel hero.
Well, he was the closest kind of to Tony Stark because they talk about how dark he is, but he's also, he's a bachelor. He's rich.
Yeah.
He's always having parties and hanging out with the hot chicks and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, and I thought that I think Batman to me was the reason why. It was my flagship guy. Right. And it was cooler than anybody else. but maybe Marvel had some more interesting guys than DC did.
Maybe, and also Batman didn't have superpowers. Did that appeal to you? That he was just kind of a regular guy?
He's a really smart, athletic detective.
Right,
You know, more than anything.
Right, because Superman, I mean, I feel like the hardest job probably in the entire world nowadays is writing Superman. Like, how he's omnipotent, you know, he basically has one weakness, and how, after 80 years of stories, do you find something new to say about that character?
That's why I always loved, and it's never changed for me, Chris Reeve's portrayal of Superman.
Which I love, too.
It's because, you know, when he's Clark Kent, like, he's a nerd.
Yeah.
Awkward, and whether he's just playing that part or not, he does such a great job. And I also love the fact, I know we're talking about movies, but look, there's something a little bit off about him. Like, he's a big guy, good looking guy, but he looks a little bit nuts. Like, you wouldn't want to go confront him, where these other guys are just like Ken dolls, that they're not tough to me. But Christopher Reeve looked tough. He made Superman much more accessible, cool, fun. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like I said, it's a movie, not a comic, but that might be the way you might want to write it now. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. I agree with you. That's my Superman. You know, he represented everything that I think is great about Superman that they've kind of gotten away from now with the Zack Snyder movies, at least in my opinion. You know,
I agree. Superman, I don't even know who Superman is now.
Well, exactly. What is his personality? But, I mean, what drives him?
You know, and who is the guy?
It was Brandon Routh before, and now it's this guy Henry Cavill.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So they've had two Supermans, and neither one of them was
didn't really fit.
Yeah, it didn't really fit. And now Superman's killed the villain in the Man of Steel. I thought that was weird, right? Yeah.
He never killed anybody before, right?
Right. Well, in the comics, sometimes he did, but they set up certain traps where he kind of had to do it.
It was always a moral dilemma for him.
Yeah, exactly. And I think some of those are kind of out of continuity. But I think if you ask the editors and the people at DC Comics officially, like, does Superman kill? The answer would be probably absolutely not. Even though there have been, in the 80 years, there have been a few instances where he has killed
people. But the overall vibe is
the same, he probably doesn't. Neither does Batman.
Let's talk more about the rivalry and tell me about some of the actual things. So Marvel and DC, they're both the leaders, and are there some chicanery going on between the two?
Oh, all sorts, man. There's a bunch of instances where they found spies in each other's offices from the other company. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, so there's a few instances. My favorite one was, this was around 1971. So DC was still the leader at that time, and this guy named Carmine Infantino was running DC. You remember him? You know, he used to draw The Flash.
Yeah.
Great artist. Maybe not a great manager, but a great artist. So basically, they discovered that there was somebody who was working in the DC production department who was working late at night because he worked in production. And so he would go through people's desks, including Carmine Infantino's, and try to steal intel. So then he would leak that intel to the fanzines at the time and also maybe to Marvel. So, DC was getting kind of pissed off about this. And Carmine Infantino tried to launch this like World War II style counter-espionage op against this dude. They even had a nickname for the op. They called it Blockbuster. So Infantino printed up a memo on official DC letterhead that was this fake memo. He just made something up, printed it up, and said that DC was going to start releasing these 500-page comics, which is ridiculous, because comics at the time were 30 pages or whatever it was. So he printed this memo up that was totally fake just to catch the spy. They left it in the outbox on his desk, and then they just kind of waited. They baited the trap. And sure enough, a couple weeks later, people are starting to talk about that DC's going to release these 500-page comics. Stan Lee starts talking about that he's going to match their 500-page comics. And if you look back at the fanzines at the time, there's actual news reports that say, we've got this rumor that the DC's coming out with these huge, these giant-sized comics. And
so he knows for sure there's a mole.
He knows for sure. And so they caught the mole this way. But, I would hope that something bad would happen to him. But apparently all they did was they didn't let him work nights anymore. Which is kind of ridiculous. They didn't even fire the dude. The comics
industry, they take him down the mailroom and whip him like that.
You want something out of a Martin Scorsese movie where they get out of Vice. That was it. They just didn't let him work nights anymore.
But there was enough of a rivalry between the two. They're both vying for the same market that you're going to have those sort of things.
Definitely. And there's all sorts of things about, they're trying to steal talent from one another. It's also been a big story over the years. Jack Kirby, he was basically stolen away by DC in 1970, and that was a huge, huge
interesting
bomb that rocked the industry, because he was almost stood in for Marvel as much as Stan Lee did. He was probably more as much responsible, like we were talking about earlier, as Marvel's success. So that was a huge bombshell.
So is it like, once again, I was kind of equated back to wrestling with WCW and WWE, the wrestling wars, mm-hmm. and to bring over, let's for example, when they brought over the NWO, Hulk Hogan and Scott Hall and Kevin Nash,
right.
they paid a lot of money to make them... to get them to jump companies. Is that what they would do with Jack Kirby?
Well, exactly. Yeah, you know, and it's funny because I don't know if it's the same in wrestling. It probably is, but then the fans are so invested in these people that they almost feel betrayed that they would sure. go to these other companies. And so it's sort of a risk for these people. But yeah, you know, they want more maybe creative control of the things they promised him. Jack Kirby left because the contract that Marvel was offering him, he thought was kind of crap. And he also was resentful of Stan Lee hogging all the credit. And so Carmen Infantino at the time offered him a chance to basically do whatever he wanted, give him more money, let him work from his house, all these things. It's pretty interesting.
It's funny, though, because Jack Kirby, I'm thinking all the stuff he did with Marvel, but I'm not familiar with anything he did with DC.
Yeah, so he started – it's funny. You know, he went over to DC with this huge fanfare. They started running all these ads. It's like, you know, they call him the king. The king is coming. The king is coming for months and months and months. It was the biggest story. He gets to DC, and the title they put him on is Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, which is kind of ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's where he started. They kind of eased him in, but then he had this whole grand group of titles that he wanted to start called the Fourth World, which was his own creation, and that's what we're seeing now with a little bit with this new Justice League movie. That's the villain, Steppenwolf, comes from his whole Fourth World. Okay. Do you know Darkseid, that villain?
No, that's Jack Kirby, though?
Yeah, he started that. He created that. And so he's launched these titles, Mr. Miracle is another one, in the early 70s that were his own creations, and that was what he'd been really chomping at the bit to do at Marvel. They wouldn't let him, or they wouldn't pay him enough for the titles, so he went to DC, and they kind of fizzled, unfortunately.
You know, it's interesting. Like, I bet you at the time, whoever was, if it's Carmine Infantino, which I always thought was Carmine Infante for some reason. Okay. You know, you're a kid when you really don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
They're probably thinking, okay, this Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah.
Kids love this guy, or chicks love it. We're going to make Jimmy Olsen the next big thing. We're putting Jack Kirby with Jimmy Olsen. They're probably like, yes, what a great way to go. Yeah. Now looking back, it's a funny thing. But at the time, they probably had big plans for Jimmy Olsen.
It's crazy, though. You should read the issue before Jack Kirby arrives and the issue after he arrives. And the issue before, it's like totally juvenile kid stuff. There's an issue where Jimmy Olsen, like, captures Superman's tears and turns into a superhero by using Superman's tears. I mean, it's just stupid stuff like that. And then Jack Kirby arrives and the whole thing just goes completely off the rails. It's like an acid trip with these weird villains and like weird concepts and crazy costumes.
And that's how it was, but that's also how it was advertised. The title was Superman's Pal,
yes,
in smaller letters, Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah,
exactly. Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, the story, it just depends on who you believe. The story Jack Kirby likes to tell is that was the one title DC had that did not have a permanent creative team. He did not want to come to DC and kick somebody off their gotcha. Title and cost them a job. Who knows? Now, the story other people tell is that they didn't quite trust him. They wanted to bring him in because he was more of a Marvel guy. Yeah, so they kind of...
Especially with all these moles going back and forth. Hey, man, who's to say that, you know, hey, go over there and let them pay you money and then report back to us.
Exactly. And it's funny because what Jack Kirby was doing when he got to DC was really top secret. So he thought Marvel was going to steal some of his concepts for him. So he was keeping his books under lock and key. DC was very worried that Marvel was going to steal them.
Oh.
But one day, Jack Kirby's assistant went over to Marvel, and he found photocopies of Jack Kirby's upcoming comics tacked up on the wall. So apparently somebody that was working with Jack Kirby photocopied it and then leaked it to Marvel. So it's like stuff like that was always happening.
Double-crossing each other completely.
Just crazy, yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, this is Chris.
Chris Jericho inviting you to the first ever Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Picture this: rock and roll, wrestling, comedy, live podcasting, all on the open ocean from October 27th to the 31st, 2018, from Miami to Nassau. I'm bringing Hall of Fame wrestlers, some of the greatest rock and roll bands on the planet, and putting the first wrestling ring on a cruise ship ever. Don't be a stupid idiot. Make the list. Check us out at ChrisJerichoCruise.com.
What year or years were, like, Marvel and DC their most popular?
You mean with the highest circulation?
Yeah, like, collectively. Like, was it the 70s? Is it the 60s?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, DC was huge in the 40s, in part because they had Superman. So Superman was selling, like, a million copies an issue. And, you know, yeah, because they had that, you know, the TV show, the cartoon, the radio show. And so Superman was, like, an icon.
Also, wasn't, like, also Captain America and Superman. They're very patriotic during wartime heroes, right? Yeah.
Yeah, you love that first issue of Captain America. He's, like, knocking out Hitler.
Yeah,
Have you seen that?
You know, yes, that famous he's literally one? Punching Hitler.
I love that. Like, I just love that they do this. It's just like straight up propaganda.
You
but
could
I,
never
I love
do that
it
now, right?
You could not, exactly.
Well, it's just like EC Comics, the ones that had no comic code, where they just have all these horrible, like,
right,
terrible, like, slasher horror movie things with people getting their stomachs ripped out and their,
yeah,
you know, and it's because there was no rules.
Right. Did you ever read those as a kid? Did you?
Went back and bought the, they published them all as, not treasuries, but as anthologies, like coffee table books.
Yeah.
And I bought them, but they were in black and white, but they were still really gross. EC Comics was it was called.
That's right. I remember there was a famous cover where it's somebody holding an axe and holding a woman's decapitated head. And
that, because there was no ratings, no rules, just do whatever you want.
It's unbelievable.
And, you know, Captain America punching out Hitler is kind of in that that zone for sure.
I love to think of parents in the 40s. They'll take their kid to the Five and Dime, grab them a comic book. You know, they come back with one of these EC Comics. It was like a decapitated head on the
terrible,
front.
Right?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So, but you're saying Superman sold a million copies?
Yeah,
then.
And, you know, in the 60s when there was a Batman TV show, Batman also probably sold about a million, about 900,000 to a million copies.
How
but ever since then, you know, circulation has been declining, as we know, with all print outlets have
absolutely
been declining.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the 60s was probably the heyday of Marvel. They overtook DC in sales in 1972, so they were doing pretty well then, but... You know, it's on a gradual decline.
Is that
since.
On the backs in 72 overtaking DC on the backs of what characters, what titles?
Well, I mean, also Spider-Man was their hugest title. That was probably their number one title. But, they had all – X-Men was also big for a while, especially starting in the mid-70s. You know, they had great
– Are all these being created by Stan Lee, or is he getting the credit at least?
Yeah. I mean, most of their titles were done with Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Thor, X-Men. Spider-Man was done with Steve Ditko. So
Steve Ditko, yeah.
You got to love him.
I liked his art.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
You know, he's still around. You should interview. You should have
really?
Him on his podcast.
Gosh,
yeah,
he must be in his 70s.
He's probably in his
80s.
Yeah, he works out of a studio in Times Square and apparently doesn't ever really make any public appearances. He's just up there doing who knows what. But so Marvel. But it's funny, the way Marvel took the lead away from DC also involves another one of these ridiculous double crosses where. Mostly, you know, their prices of the two companies, the comics, kind of move concurrently. And so this is a story I was told. Whether or not it's true, I don't know. But this is a story I was told by the editor-in-chief at the time, was DC had planned to raise their price from 15 cents to 25 cents. So the head of DC goes and talks to the head of Marvel and says, hey, we're going to do this. You ought to raise your price as well, which... You know, may or may not be legal, I won't say, but, you know, price fixing. Anyway, so apparently Martin Goodman, the head of Marvel at the time, said, okay, we'll raise our price to 25 cents. So DC raises its price to 25 cents. A few months later, Marvel raises its price to 25 cents. But then the very next month, Marvel basically reneges on the agreement and drops its price back down to 20 cents. So Martin Goodman, the head of Marvel, basically told someone within Marvel that he was going to make DC take a bath. Those were his words.
Wow.
And so he reneged on this agreement. Suddenly, Marvel comics are much cheaper at 20 cents than DC's at 25 cents. You know, a kid who has a dollar walks into the Five and Dime, he can get 5 Marvel comics versus 4 DC comics. And so Marvel comics sales zoom ahead at that point, and that's what put Marvel ahead of DC finally.
I love it's like old school mafia.
It really is. Yeah. It really is. Yeah, but you know?
There's something else that I read in one of the things that you were talking about, how there was some guys that were using pen names and working for both at the same time.
That's right.
How's that even possible?
Well, that was in the 60s. So DC was the premier company. You know, they had a, you know, beautiful offices in a midtown Manhattan skyscraper, and Marvel was this kind of crappy little, you know, also ran company. It had almost gone out of business in the 50s. By the early 60s, they had basically one employee. That was Stan Lee. And so, you know, these freelancers who were working for DC, that represented security. You know, they paid well. It was a steady paycheck. And when Marvel started coming up in the early 60s, you know, they could see that Marvel was doing interesting things. They wanted to go draw for them, but they didn't want to tick off DC enough that they would be fired by DC. So they went over to Marvel with the caveat that they were allowed to use pen names. And so you have all these artists going over in the early 60s using fake names.
Is there one that you recall that stands out?
What their fake names were? Yeah. I can't remember.
So there was no famous artist that wasn't real.
Well, I mean,
like if you say Steve Ditko was not a real guy,
No. They, you know, there was a guy. They basically, when they created their pen names, a lot of them would take like their middle name and then the first name of their child, and that's how they come up with their pen name. but you said you were talking about Neil Adams earlier.
Yeah.
Neil Adams was probably the hottest artist in the business. He was working at DC for a while. He had a lot of power. He went over to talk to Stan Lee, and Stan Lee offered him any comic he wanted to do. He chose the X-Men.
Really?
Yeah. And so he said, all right, I want to draw the X-Men, and he put his real name on it. And at that point, basically.
So he's Neil Adams drawing Batman and X. But the thing is, if you see, I don't need to see the name. I know what Neil Adams' artwork is.
Well, that's right.
You would know this.
Right. And that was where kind of the House of Cards came down with a lot. The fans who knew who these people were because their art style was
so obvious.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know if it worked or not, but I think they did for a while be able to work at DC and Marvel at the same time. But Neil Adams ended that practice because he had so much power. He went back over to DC and said, hey, I'm working for Marvel. I dare you to do anything about it.
Right.
And, you know, Infantino, who was running the place at the time, said, okay, just don't let it interfere with your DC work. Mm-hmm. And so from then on, people could use their real names over at Marvel.
And it's funny, too, because there's a lot of, like, I always noticed that if, you know, whatever DC superhero, there was one in Marvel that would kind of match it.
Yes,
like,
right.
We've got Batman, we've got Spider-Man.
Yeah.
We've got the Submariner, we've got Aquaman. You know,
right.
We've got, like, was there ever kind of any like mirroring or copycatting that you know of, like, for sure?
Oh, there's all sorts. There's all sorts. It's funny you mentioned that because one of the best stories is there was a writer named Steve Englehart who was working at Marvel at the time, and he introduced this character called Mantis. I don't know if you saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2, the movie.
I did.
Okay, so you remember there was a character called Mantis. It was played by this woman. She had green skin and antennas.
Yeah, like
and
a praying mantis.
Yeah, well, exactly. So he introduced her in the Avengers, and a few years later, in the late 70s, he got a job over at DC to write Justice League of America. And so Steve Englehart was at a comic convention, and some fan came up to him and said, hey, you know, I really like this character, Mantis. Is this mean that now that you're left Marvel that we're not going to see any more of Mantis? And he thought about it, and he was like, maybe not. So he started at DC, and in the Justice League, he introduced a character called Willow, which is basically Mantis, and he brought a Marvel character over into a DC book. And everyone who was reading comics at the time knew exactly who it was. It's just the bosses at DC had no idea. And
they didn't know. They didn't know. No one told them?
No one told them, exactly.
Wow.
So, and they probably didn't care, you know, as long as the other company didn't raise a legal stink, they just let things fly. So there's all sorts of things like that.
I like the one you said about Wonder Woman. Wonder Man.
Oh, Wonder Man. Yeah. So Wonder Man was a Marvel character that was introduced in the 60s by Stan Lee. And so once he came out, DC got a little upset because it sounded too much like Wonder Woman. So they came to Marvel and they said, hey, you know, we're going to sue you if you don't stop this character. So Stan Lee said, okay, fine. You know, I'll abide by that. They killed off Wonder Man. A few years later in the 70s, DC introduces a character called Power Girl, which came out a few years after Marvel had introduced a character called Power Man, who we now know as Luke Cage. You know, he has his own series.
Power Man. Yeah, remember him? Forgot about the,
It was Power Man.
Luke Cage, Power Man.
Exactly. Yeah. So he was introduced in the early 70s. DC introduces a character called Power Girl. So Marvel said, you know, wait a minute. You know, we...
Such bad names, though.
It's so bad. Terrible, right? Power Man.
Wonder Man.
Yeah. How long did it take him to come up with that?
Yeah, you know, terrible.
They literally looked through the thesaurus for 5 minutes. So Stan Lee said, well, you know, two can play at that game, so we're not going to kill Wonder Man anymore. So they brought him back. So now Wonder Man is a big part of the Marvel Universe.
He still exists. How long is it until there's the Wonder Man movie?
Well, he was almost going to be in the movie, apparently.
In
Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, Nathan Fillion from Firefly. So apparently he was all set to play Wonder Man and he got cut. So maybe in the future we'll see Wonder Man.
It's unbelievable, too. I want to talk to you about this as well, about the movie side of things. But before we get to that, you know so much about this stuff. Obviously, you just didn't know it writing the book. Where did you find all of these details? You interview guys?
Yeah. Interviewed a bunch of people, you know, the people who are still left alive. A lot of the people from the 60s are gone, obviously. But and also the fans are so obsessive that some of this stuff has been chronicled so well in these, like, fan-published magazines or...
It's a part of the canon now.
At this point. And so there's all these fan magazines and some professional magazines from the 60s and 70s where... You know, somebody would show up at Jack Kirby's house and do an interview and transcribe it. So you have all sorts of information that you can dig up from the time, which is really helpful. What these people were feeling and thinking, and
did you interview Stan Lee?
I did.
Wow, how did you get that?
He was doing something else. I work as a newspaper journalist by day, and so
where are you from?
From the New York Post.
But where are you from?
Oh, I'm from Virginia.
Okay.
He was doing some sort of promotion for some Marvel product, and so I got a chance to talk to him. And so
did he know you were writing a book about?
Yeah, he did. But he doesn't. I don't know. Have you ever talked to him before?
No.
He's a great guy. I take nothing away from him, but he has his stock stories that he just kind of he'll answer. Yeah, you know. So you've heard these stories a million times. So he doesn't really give you that much information.
He's not going to divulge what you want to hear. Right?
He may not. And also, he admits he has a terrible memory, and so he may not remember all this minutia.
Which is what a lot of those guys say when they just don't want to talk.
That could be.
Yeah.
That could be.
There's a guy, he used to run WCW, Ted Turner's wrestling company, called Eric Bischoff.
Uh-huh.
And now he does all of these interviews about the wrestling world. Just I don't remember. I have a bad memory.
I'm
dude. Come on, it was 20 years ago. You remember everything, right? But some guys just choose not to really get into it all. Who was the best guy that you interviewed that gave you the most information?
Ooh, all sorts. You know, we were talking about Neil Adams earlier, that famous artist from the 60s. It's interesting. The people who give you the most stuff are the people that have nothing to lose. You know, they don't need a paycheck from these companies anymore.
Right.
You know
care.
What I mean? No, they don't care. So they can speak their mind. So he was like bluntly honest. You know, the most F-bombs I have in the book came from Neil Adams, where he was just
What's some of the stuff that he told you?
Just all sorts of stuff, like where he would tell me about a lot of what I write about in the book was how DC got left behind by Marvel. You know, DC was the premier company. They had Superman, they had Batman, they had Wonder Woman. And then the 60s, Marvel is this nothing company with one employee that kind of comes up and punches them in the mouth and they don't really know what's going on. So that's really what a lot of the book is about. So Neil Adams would tell me about what it was like inside DC in the 60s and how clueless these executives were. You know, these guys, these executives who wore suits and they arrived in chauffeured limousines and, you know, they didn't know what was really going on the ground. And so when Marvel starts to challenge them, they're trying to figure out desperately, like, what's going on? You know, how can Marvel be beating us? And they would hold these famous meetings where they would gather all the people, all these like elderly editors and executives in a conference room. They would pin Marvel comics up on the wall and they would go around the room and they would say, okay, you know, so what are they doing that we're not doing? How is Marvel beating us? And, you know, they'd go to the first editor and the first executive and that, you know, they'd have these clueless answers. Like one famous answer was, maybe Marvel is using more red on their covers and that's why they're beating us. Or maybe Marvel has more words on their covers and that's why they're beating us. And so he was really good at capturing the 60s for me about what was going on in the industry at the time.
It's so interesting once again because I'm comparing this to it's over now, but and the people who listen to the show understand this. The Monday Night Wars,
right?
If you're familiar,
yeah, yeah.
WCW versus WWE, and it was getting so petty that I literally remember. So both shows would start at 8 o'clock, but Turner's show, it's Turner's company, so they can start a minute earlier. Yeah. And they were like, "We got our pyro on 10 seconds before Raw started." And they literally, dude, people jumping up and down, like, our pyro went off first. As if the pyro is like, yeah, that's what's, if you want to watch, you're going to watch whatever you want to watch. It's not the pyro that's going to catch you. But yeah, like you said, they've got more red in the covers. Well, let's give them more red.
Yeah.
But how are they beating us? Because their pyro's on first. Well, get our pyro on first.
Right.
And it's just, you get so involved in this rivalry, mm-hmm, where you start losing control of what it's really about, which is good stories,
right,
and good characters.
Well, exactly, right? And I think it's so much easier to change things and identify things on a micro level, like you say, the pyro. That's easy to change that, as opposed to that macro level of, right,
we need
maybe our
characters,
we need, yeah, better stories. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe our characters aren't interesting enough. Maybe, right, we're not doing the right marketing. And so it was much easier for them to kind of bury their head in the sand. And it sounds like it's the same with in the wrestling world.
It really, there's a lot of similarities, and that's the thing that really intrigued me about this whole concept and subject. But let me say something else. When you mentioned the '70s, '72, Marvel overtook, and they're, yeah, selling a million copies every month of certain titles. It sounds like some of these guys would almost be like rock stars. Like, are the artists or the writers, are they making big money? Are they starting to get to that level?
No, not at the time. And in part because they didn't own their creations at the, mm-hmm, time. You know, the famously Siegel and Shuster, who created Superman, you know, they died broke because,
wow,
they sold Superman for $140 to DC Comics back in the day. And they had to fight their whole lives to even get like $20,000 annual.
What judge
stipend
would not like allow that, right?
I know.
So
and
stupid.
It's so ridiculous. And what company like DC would not just give them,
well,
you,
sure,
know,
I mean,
even $1 million
cut
a
them
year
in. I mean, yeah, come on, dude,
in,
right?
Yeah. So it was
some
only
cutthroat.
Only in the 70s when, you know, the movie was about to come out. So Neil Adams really spearheaded.
Which movie?
The Superman movie.
Okay.
So really spearheaded this effort to shame DC Comics into giving them some money. So in the
Neil Adams shame to give Siegel.
Yeah, Siegel and Shuster some money,
wow,
from the, yeah. So they got a little bit, but they still basically died broke, you know.
Jeez.
And so it's a shame. So only in the 90s and, you know, after the 80s and starting in the 90s did the people really, really start to make money,
hmm,
like a lot of money. I don't know if, were you collecting comics in the 90s when that whole boom was going on? And
no, I was out by then. So explain that, though.
So
tell me, like, what's the big thing that, what's his name? McFarlane.
Yeah, Todd McFarlane,
what's
right.
What's his title?
Spider-Man.
No,
so,
what was his big one that he created?
Spawn.
Spawn.
Do you remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, that was a huge thing in the 90s. Everyone was talking about Spawn, and also was the first kind of series of action figures. I mean, I had all the Mego dolls when I was a kid, Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, all of them.
Love
but
those.
That was kind of the creation of the smaller action figure style, you know, creations there, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's unfortunate because the contracts until the early 80s, there was really no revenue sharing with the artists and the writers. They did not get a cut of the money that was coming in from these titles. And so, you know, they got a page rate. So they got paid, you know, whatever it was per, mm, page to write or to draw it. And so, but starting in the 90s, they started to reap benefits from sales. And in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, sales skyrocketed,
right,
especially
right,
with Marvel. And so Marvel released, you know, a few titles that sold 3 million copies. You know, some titles were selling 5 million
like
copies.
Which ones?
So Todd McFarlane, you mentioned, he was a famous artist on Spider-Man. They gave him his own Spider-Man title, just
gotcha,
called Spider-Man. And that sold, you know, they every month somebody was breaking the Guinness Book of World Records for most sold.
Like the glory years before the crash,
the
right?
The glory years, yeah. They released a new X-Men title that sold millions. And it was crazy. I talked to the writer, this guy named Chris Claremont, who wrote the X-Men for years and years and years. And this was
in the 70s? Or
in the 70s, yeah, and the 80s and then up to the early 90s. Yeah. And so, you know, he basically bought his own plane off royalties, he told me. Yeah.
Wow.
Which is crazy. And
tell the story I read in the fact sheet where they took him out for dinner or something like that. That's
yeah,
a great story.
Yeah. So that was, you know, you're talking about these petty things that companies do. So the employees in the industry were usually pretty friendly. So it was a small industry. They would all hang out. And so there was a time.
Guys from both companies.
Guys from both companies, exactly. So there was a time in the, you know, they would go out to dinner. So Chris Claremont, who, like I said, wrote the X-Men, he went out to dinner with a whole bunch of people from Marvel and DC. It was one of these, like, you know, these gangbang dinners where the check comes at the end and nobody really knows what to do. So
short arms.
Yeah, you know, you know how that is. Nobody really wants to step up. Yeah,
exactly.
And so the DC people are like, you know, can we put this on our credit card? Should we pay? And, you know, it's taking 10, 15 minutes. The waiter's getting antsy. And so finally, Chris Claremont is just like, you know what? Forget it. I'm just going to pay for this. Whips out his own private credit card, drops it, pays for everyone, Marvel DC. So the next day, Chris Claremont gets an angry phone call from the head of DC telling him, like, never, I never want to hear a story where you're paying for dinner for DC employees. Because basically, Chris Claremont was doing it to kind of rub it in their noses that Marvel writers had way more money than the DC writers.
Wow.
Because the Marvel titles were selling so much more. So, wow. You know, he's got a private plane and the DC writers probably aren't making any royalties.
Private plane from the comic books.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's insane. It's insane.
Wow.
I mean, but there were people like Jim Lee was another huge artist at Marvel at the time. He was drawing the X-Men comic books and he was making millions and millions of dollars. And, These brothers called the Q-Birds. Have you heard of them? They were also drawing the X-Men. They got $1 million contract per year each just to work on the X-Men.
That's insane. I never realized there was that much money in comics.
Well, they're only at that time, I think.
But it's like the glory years of the record industry in the 80s or the glory years. There's a lot of that time frame where you made a lot of money for – I'm not going to say minimal work, but it's, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 20 times what you'd make today just because of the way that content is consumed now.
Yeah.
Back then, if you wanted to read the comic book, guess what? You had to buy it.
Right. You can't download it.
Yeah.
Like
and you
now.
Can't sit in the back of the store reading it either because as soon as you get your finger oils on, they're like, hey, you got to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want no dog-eared copies because people started wanting it in mint condition, et cetera. Right. You had to buy it.
Right. I know. It's a shame.
I'm sure you're the same as me. I remember going to the comic book store monthly and I'd have to limit. So I'll buy 10 titles, 10 comics. I don't have enough to buy. So I'd have to choose.
Yeah.
I want Batman. I want this one. I want G.I. Joe. I love Teen Titans.
Yeah.
That was my shit. Jericho, by the way, came from the Walls of Jericho by the German power metal band Helloween. And also the most useless Teen Titan of all, whose name was Jericho.
Unbelievable.
Remember?
Is that right?
That's a true story.
What was his power again, Jericho?
And it's funny because people always ask me, where did you get the name Jericho? And I use the Helloween one because it's cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And I still love Helloween. But the Jericho guy, he was mute.
That's right.
He had sideburns and a blonde Art Garfunkel afro.
Yes.
And he was like an empath? No, he wasn't an empath. Raven was an empath.
That's right. There was something he was sensitive about.
It was really bad. Like, I would say, I used to tell people I love Aquaman, and there was always be a big controversy over, like, Aquaman, he's not a great superhero. I'm like, why? What's his powers? Oh, really? Okay. So let's say you're on a ship, and the ship sinks. What's Batman going to do? Nothing. What's Aquaman going to do? Call a whale. Take you back to shore.
Right. It's a pretty good power, actually.
Exactly. So, but I would say that Jericho, I'm just looking it up right now. On my phone here. I want to see exactly what he did. This is not starting off good for Jericho. He's a superhero and an honorary Teen Titan.
So what made you gravitate towards him?
Nothing, just the name.
Just the name was cool.
I just liked the name Jericho. I thought that was a really cool type of an idea. But, you know, like I said, so I was really into that sort of thing. But there was rules. You could not read those comics in the store. You had to buy them.
Yes.
So there was a lot more money at stake, right?
Yes, right. Well, I mean, that's still going on. I was in a comic book store here in Midtown Manhattan a few weeks ago. And you see the people, you know, they put stacks of the new comics out. You know, there's maybe 50 copies of one comic. And there was a guy, you know, very meticulously flipping through, you know, examining the spine of each comic to see which one is in the best condition.
Yeah.
So that's still going on.
And some people would buy two copies because they didn't want to read it.
That's right.
Because if you read it, it's like buying an album and you open the cellophane. Yeah. And that would kind of, you know, deplete the value of it or whatever. But let me ask you this. So when you're talking about Marvel and DC, and we're talking a lot about the 70s and 80s, is that rivalry still prevalent today?
Oh, yeah.
And how I'm not sure important is the word, but how many people are still reading comics? Has it been affected as much as records and books and everything else?
Yeah, but that's true. It's interesting. Yeah, you're exactly right. It has moved sort of out of the publishing realm into the movies and TV realm. That's kind of where the rivalry lives now, because the comic industry, you know, their circulation numbers are way down. You know, we mentioned Superman might sell a million copies in the 40s. Now it's lucky to sell 50,000. And so it's almost like... it's almost like a loss leader for the companies, where they keep these titles alive. You know, they can preserve the trademarks and all these things, but
almost so they can keep the IP alive.
Because that's exactly right. Yeah. And so there have been times over the years, especially with DC Comics, which is owned by, as we know, this big conglomerate, Warner Brothers, where the people at Warner Brothers would look at the, you know, the profit sheet for DC and say, why are we even publishing these comics? And this happened in the 70s when comics went through a rough patch. And so, you know, Warner Brothers would try to shut them down. And the people at DC Comics rightfully said, you know, we need to keep publishing these because, like you said, the IP. And also we need new ideas, new stories, new characters. We can't just stay stagnant with the same characters we have. Hmm. And so we need to, this is almost like an R&D lab where we need to keep developing new things.
Right.
So that may be the way that they think about it now. It probably makes, you know, publishing, I think, does makes us... decent profit, but you know, Marvel's owned by Disney. It's like a rounding error to Disney, well, the amount of money they must be making from publishing.
Right.
But so now, like, the movies are where it's at. So that's
the new kind of rivalry.
Yeah. So that's where the rivalry lives. And if you look online, this is the fans have kind of lined up. So there's that old school rivalry that I can remember from the 70s. I don't know if you remember this.
Yes.
Yeah. So you said you're a DC guy.
I'm a DC guy.
Did you ever get made fun of by your Marvel friends?
I didn't really have a lot of, it's more like, you would have a couple comic book friends and you would stick with them and you would have debates, but it wasn't like there was 18,000 people that are into comics. There might have been four.
Right.
You know, when there's 20 bullies beating up the comic book nerds, you take what you can get, right?
Yeah.
Okay, wait, here's the quick segue.
Okay.
Jericho can possess a person after making eye contact with him.
Ah.
His body turns substantial and enters the subject. While he is in possession, Jericho has access to all that host's powers, physical, mental, and magical. He's also able to tap into their memories. Okay, so he can basically possess people. So... I don't know. Is that a good one? Or
no, bad? I think it's a pretty,
pretty good
power.
One. Yeah.
But like you said, the character design,
people
should look online. It's
the worst
character design. It really is Art Garfunkel as a superhero.
It's terrible. And he's got this kind of like medieval times outfit.
Oh, yes. Right.
It's like we're looking right now. He's got blue tights, a purple kind of a waistcoat, a frilly shirt. And Art Garfunkel. It looks like some kind of a cape there as well. So, and he can't talk. He's a mute.
Unbelievable.
So there you go. Yeah. We're talking about Marvel versus DC in the movies now. And it's very funny to me because if you just ask me off the top, man, I have to say this, I don't like superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're all kind of very similar to me. But it seems like the Marvel universe is killing the DC universe.
Killing
them, right?
Yeah. If you look at what happened with Justice League that just came out a few weeks ago, you know, Justice League was supposed to be the culmination of DC's plan that they set in motion with Man of Steel. It was supposed to be the build-up, but it actually did worse at the box office than some of their previous movies. So they're actually losing viewers.
And those are supposed to be like the big gang. Everybody wants to see it.
Exactly.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, Marvel is just doing such a better job of giving the audiences kind of what they want in a superhero movie. Their tone is much lighter. They have a better handle on what makes their characters great. So DC is just kind of... they're kind of fumbling around looking for ways to make these characters appealing. Like we mentioned with Superman, I don't think they have a very good handle on who Superman is and what people want to see from Superman on the screen. This is not my Superman.
But it seems like that DC was the first to do the movies, right? Because Superman and then obviously late 80s, Michael Keaton, Batman.
Yep.
I can't recall any Marvel movies at that point.
No, I mean, they've really not done great films. You know, they had a real trouble establishing some of their films.
Right.
They had a famous Fantastic Four film in the 90s that was so bad that it went straight to DVD, but it never was released. Marvel bought up all the copies.
Really?
So it never got released.
Who was in that? This is not the Michael Chiklis.
No.
There's another one before that.
Yeah, you can find bootlegs of it if you
really?
Go to comic conventions, and you can probably see it on YouTube. It's so ridiculously bad. Some German producer optioned it from Marvel Comics, and what I was told was there was no clause in the contract about how big the budget can be. So this guy completely cheaped out on the budget. So I think the whole movie costs like $1 million, wow. which, you know, even back then was like nothing.
The thing should be about $1 million just creating him.
So you should see, there's one scene where, you know, Mr. Fantastic, his power is he can stretch. And so there's one scene in there where it's showing his arm stretching. But what they did was they took a long glove. They taped it to a pole, and there's no hand in the glove, so they just basically pulled on the other end of the glove. So you see this glove stretching, and that's how they did the special effects.
Oh, it's terrible!
It's unbelievable.
Terrible. What was the first big Marvel hit? Then Spider-Man in the early 2000s?
Well, Blade was one, but I don't think people. Yeah, people, I mean, it didn't know that was a comic book film.
No, to this day, just right now, it's the first I've heard of this.
Right, so that was one they licensed. You know, they did a lot of that before 2008. They started making their own movies with Iron Man, but they would license their properties to other studios.
Oh, right.
So X-Men was probably, for me, is what really started it in 2000. And they licensed that to Fox. And I think Fox did a really good job capturing what makes the X-Men great. You know, they cast great actors.
Because if I'm here, just off the top of my head, obviously there's Superman, there's mm-hmm. Batman. Now they've got Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
But with Marvel, I mean, like you said, it's Iron Man, it's X-Men, it's Spider-Man, it's now the Avengers, it's Thor.
Mm-hmm.
Guardians of the Galaxy, which I'd never heard of as a comic book, that was
right.
brilliant as well.
Right.
You know, DC, not a lot of options. And then, like, we actually had a little text joke back and forth about Superman versus Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrible.
Terrible.
That was the movie I was so excited about, and then I didn't even watch it until about 6 months after because people were just saying how bad it was. And I was on a plane one time watching it, and I was like, and dude, I had to shut it off. I'm not sure even what happened at the end. I couldn't handle it.
I was the exact same way, where I had the option of watching that on a plane or staring at the back of the seat in front of me, and I chose staring at the seat. Yeah. You were the same way.
I believe, like I said, Batman's my guy. Like, yep. I love the Batman. Like Neil Adams, I remember Batman beats up a bunch of gang members, and the one guy goes, Madre de Dios. I guess they're Mexican. Madre de Dios. El bat hombre, whatever bat is in Spanish. And it's like they really went for the Spanish caption.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the whole 70s thing with the Ra's al Ghul and all that weird stuff. And I really liked the Christian Bale Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, Michael Keaton is probably the best Batman, even though it was the weirdest choice.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck, he's okay. You know, I'm not offended by him being Batman. But I have a rule.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's more of a pet peeve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If you play a superhero, you can't go play another superhero.
Right. So Daredevil just disqualified. You're disqualified.
Yeah. Just like Green Lantern disqualified Ryan Reynolds. He should not be Deadpool.
What about Chris Evans?
No. He was already the Human Torch.
He's such a good Captain America, don't you think?
You're disqualified.
Wow. Okay.
How am I supposed to know which guy's which? Are you the Human Torch now being Captain America? I'm confused. I don't like it.
Man, yeah. Sir's Ben Affleck, right, if that was his sentence, where he only gets to be Daredevil in that one terrible film forever.
But that's the thing, though, too, because – and maybe you know something. Something about this as well. Is there some kind of a rule that they have to put out so many superhero movies in a year? Because it seems they put so many of them out, and it's sequel and it's group, and then there's like, you know, Ant-Man. Does Ant-Man really deserve his own movie? Like, come on, man. You know,
I kind of liked Ant-Man.
Okay, well, I'm not saying it wasn't good.
The thing is, Marvel is so good that, you know, they can take, like you said, these obscure properties and they can make them hits. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy stars a space raccoon and a tree. And it's, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar.
Yeah.
Whereas DC on the other side, they can't even make Superman work. So it's kind of ridiculous. So I trust Marvel can take whatever obscure character is in their archives and turn it into a movie that I'll give a chance.
Is there somebody at Marvel that's spearheading this? Why is Marvel so good and DC just missing the ball?
There is. Yeah, exactly. There's, you know, the guy who runs Marvel Studios, Kevin Feige, is a comic book geek. You know, he's been reading these things for years. Apparently he's such a nerd that he has all these like action figures and memorabilia. He had to build a shed outside his house to house all this stuff. So I trust that guy. Also, they're really in touch with the publishing side of things. So they bring in Marvel writers and editors who have been working on these characters for years to consult on the films. And so, like we were talking about earlier, the publishing is a good R&D lab for what works. So, you know, they've tried out the stories, they've tried out these different versions of the characters, and now they know, okay, what do people like about Spider-Man? They know exactly what people like about Spider-Man. So they can put that on screen, and I think they did with that Spider-Man Homecoming.
Right.
So Marvel is very good at capturing what makes those characters click. Whereas, unfortunately, DC's characters, they're so old-fashioned. A lot of them, like we were talking about, were created in the 30s.
Still have that vibe, yeah.
Still have that vibe, and they don't know what is the way forward with these characters, and I don't think somebody has brought them a viable vision of these characters yet.
And it's interesting, like, if you're talking about the Avengers, like, who's in the Avengers? Thor, Iron Man, Spider-Man?
The Hulk. Spider-Man's not, okay. But, you know, he is now, I guess.
But the proper is Thor, Iron Man, Hulk.
Ant-Man.
Is he in the Avengers?
Well, he was originally. Jeez, Iron Man. Yeah.
But all those characters can hold their own movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go to the Justice League, which is Superman, Batman...
Yeah,
Wonder Woman. She finally. I think that was a pretty good movie.
Yeah, right? it was decent.
But
yeah.
You couldn't do an Aquaman movie on his own.
Well, one's coming out next year.
Is there?
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. It seems like is there some kind of a minimum that they have to do? Or something,
I don't know. You're right. It does seem like that. I don't know. I think they're just trying to strike while the iron is hot.
Yeah.
And pretty much any superhero film they put out now does okay, but. Like we're talking about with DC, it seems to be diminishing returns. So it's going to be interesting when Aquaman comes out. You know, Aquaman, I don't know if you ever watched Entourage, the HBO show, you know, and it was
that was the big
thing.
That
was the big joke. Yeah. And so now it's actually happening. And it'll be interesting to see if audiences pay their money, pay their $18 or whatever it is.
I wonder.
I don't know.
You know, because once again, the Aquaman's kind of got a bad reputation. Jason Momoa, he's hot, sexy guy.
Yep.
But is he a box office draw that you're going to go see Jason Momoa is Aquaman?
Right.
Like, not sure about that.
Talks
you know?
To whales. I don't. I really don't know, and I don't know what the plot of that film is going to be.
It's going to
be a real test. But I mean, I think with the Justice League, they've already shown that they've kind of.
Right. That didn't work.
It didn't work exactly.
But the way things are going, so will there be superhero movies constantly until, like you mentioned, that Disney owns Marvel now?
Yeah.
So with Disney behind us, like the Star Wars movies, there's going to be a Star Wars movie every Christmas.
Pretty much.
Which I think is great for me. I love it. But will it be a comic book movie every Christmas?
Certainly on the Marvel side, at least. You know, Marvel, that's kind of Disney's genius, is they look at these things that they bought up and they look at ways to exploit them that people...
Basically,
I don't know about you, but I never thought there would be another Star Wars movie. I never thought there needed to be another Star Wars movie. And then Disney buys Lucasfilm and says, you know, why not?
And they've all been... Well, there's been two, but they've both been very good.
Exactly.
And better than the last three Lucas ones for me.
Definitely. Me too. Yeah. And the merchandising money, that's really where they make their bank. And so that's kind of what they look at with these properties. And so... You know, Marvel is in an interesting position because, you know, they've planned out what they call their phases. You know, phase one, they introduce the solo characters and they end with the Avengers. Phase two, they introduce new solo characters. So they're coming to the end of phase three soon, where a lot of the original actors, their contracts are up. Robert Downey Jr. is probably going to leave. Chris Evans is probably going to leave. And so they're going to have to figure out, are they going to recast these roles and reboot with a new Iron Man? Or are they going to introduce these secondary characters and try to give us, you know, Black Panther 2 and 3 or...
Well, we've seen this, though, Reed, and that it doesn't... Like, obviously, Robert Downey Jr., best Iron Man, but there's been 10 Batmans, there's been 10 Supermans, going back to George Reeves, to Christopher Reeves, to Brandon Routh, and, you know, Adam West, and Christian Bale, and freaking Val Kilmer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's more, once again, we've been talking about this whole time, it's the story, it's the character. And we love Robert Downey Jr., but I love Sean Connery playing James Bond, too. And I also love, you know, Daniel Craig playing James Bond. So
yeah, I agree. But I think one of the strengths that Marvel has established is that all these characters exist in this single universe. That all these characters could pop up in one another's movies. Each movie leads into the next movie. So whatever happened in Captain America: Civil War has repercussions on the next film. And so it's this one long story that they're telling with each movie. And so it's sort of jarring, I think, if they recast someone. And so they may need to just hit the reset button altogether and just start a whole new story, which I would be okay with, you said.
Once again, they need the content. So there's been, I think, three or four different Spider-Man reboots
in the last
10 years or whatever it is. Yeah. As we wind down here, a couple last questions. Mm-hmm. Is there any new characters coming out? Because it's like, listen, we're talking about, like you mentioned, superheroes that are 70 years old.
Yeah.
Now, it's the same thing with rock and roll. Okay, I went and saw Metallica in a stadium this summer, Guns N' Roses in a stadium, U2 in a stadium. Yeah. But who's going to come up and play the next stadiums? I'm not sure. Is there any characters coming up, or is it even possible to do that at this point in time?
Yeah, it's a good point. I don't think it is, because I've wondered that. And Marvel and DC have tried over the years to introduce these new characters.
Any names?
They don't really stick. I would say the one thing that's probably within the last 10 years is Marvel had a series out called The Runaways, which was about a group of teenagers who discover that their parents are supervillains.
Oh.
And so they band together to defeat their parents. It's a pretty interesting concept.
Cool.
Yeah, interesting. And so now it's going to be a TV series.
I can see that being a movie, like Guardians of the Galaxy, this weird concept.
Yeah.
It's not kind of neat.
It's pretty solid. I think it's on Hulu.
That's a DC?
Yeah, it's a Marvel series. Yeah, it's on Hulu. I think it's coming out soon. So, I mean, that I figure if you introduce a character in print and it gets a TV series, that's about as successful as you can get.
Sure, of course.
But, you know, is there merchandise? Do all the kids play Runaways? You know, do you have breakfast cereal from the Runaways?
Do you have a talking tree that can, you know, say one word over and over again? That's funny.
I am Groot. So, there are successes like that, but...
What about DC? Bring back Power Girl?
Power Girl's still around. You know, I don't.
It seems like Marvel is has won.
Oh, yeah.
Well, just hesitation.
Then. Well, there's a little bit of hesitation, only in that DC has Superman and Batman, and so I think
good call.
It's really hard to lose when you have those. Like
Superman and Batman could be bigger than anybody in Marvel's pantheon. Maybe,
definitely, right? And so maybe this is. Right now, we're living through movies and adaptations of the characters that we don't like, but I'm sure in 10, 20 years, something else will come around. I mean, Superman and Batman seem like they're forever at this point. Whereas on the Marvel side, I mean, everyone knows Iron Man, but I think the reason that we love Iron Man and kids know Iron Man is because the movies were so well done and so successful.
And Robert Downey Jr. is so good.
Robert Downey Jr., exactly. So
Is Spider-Man the biggest Marvel or Iron Man?
Spider-Man is the biggest merchandise character in the world, so to me that tells me he's probably...
In the world.
More than Batman.
Really?
At this point, yeah.
Wow.
Which is... I was surprised at that as well.
You know, something that I thought... I think they're kind of getting back to, but I always loved the concept of Spider-Man was that, you know, Peter Parker was a nerdy little wimpy teenager, and they did kind of get away from that, but they've kind of brought it back a bit. But I always liked that concept, like just like that's the real story, like this nerdy guy, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. And that's the Peter Parker they presented in the film, which I think was so appealing that you can root for this underdog, and you know, he gets superpowers and kind of goes to another level. So I really like that. I'm with you. I like that version of
who's your favorite.
I also like Batman. I'm with you.
Yeah.
I just thought he was the coolest. You know, the way he was illustrated was cool. I also like detective stories and mystery stories. His were kind of structured as, you know, he has to solve a mystery, which I always thought was better than just
he used his mind.
You know? Yeah, right. It was better than just like Hulk punching somebody out for 30 pages, never really interested me. I liked plot and like you said, somebody using their mind. So
who's your Aquaman? A little bit more obscure.
Oh man. And you know what? I've never read an entire Aquaman comic in my entire life. What am I missing?
I don't know. I just liked his orange shirt and green pants and blonde hair. What about Plastic Man?
I remember that cartoon. Did you ever watch that growing
terrible.
Up? Yeah. Awful.
Not good.
No.
Is there any other kind of topics that you want to tackle in the future? Because I know you mentioned you had a book about the Duke and Clemson rivalry.
Yeah, Duke. Carolina rivalry. Somebody joked that I've written two books about rivalries. I need a rivalry trilogy.
Well, it's kind of a good.
I know.
You know, everyone needs a gimmick. That could be your gimmick. The Reed Tucker rivalry
series.
Let's
do it. I don't know what it would be, though.
Pepsi versus Coke.
That's a good one.
McDonald's versus Burger King. Although McDonald's is just one.
Yeah.
You know, WWE versus WWE has been done to the death.
Has it? Okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
But is there any other type of ideas that you have that you want to do? Or
I got nothing, no. I know. I wish I had something genius.
Well, in the meantime,
right now,
you got Slugfest. It's a great concept and a great book. And I thank you for doing this, man.
Man, thank you. It's an honor to be here. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks to Reed Tucker, his book is called Slugfest, Inside the Epic 50-Year Battle Between Marvel and DC, and it's available at Amazon.com. You don't have to be a comic book fan to dig this book either. It's a serious rivalry that continues to this day, and some of the stuff that Marvel and DC tried to do to each other to get to that number one spot in the comic world is insane. Yeah. So thanks again to Reed Tucker. Great to have him on the show. And thanks to all of you European fans who've been rocking and coming up to see us in droves with Steel Panther and Fozzy. We've been having just a tremendous time. Every show has been better than the last. Huge crowds, great venues, great people. Tonight, we're actually in Luxembourg for the first time. Our first ever show in Luxembourg tonight, February 7th. We still got a handful of dates left on this tour. February 8th in Stuttgart at the Porsche Arena. February 9th in Zurich at Volkshauser. February 11th in Barcelona. 12th is Madrid. 13th in Bilbao. And we wrap up this amazing tour. Thanks to all of you who are coming, who want to come, who continue to come. And then we go back to the States and continue the Judas Rising Tour 2018 with special guests Through Fire, Santa Cruz, and Dark Sky Choir. That starts February 28th in New Orleans, goes all the way through to April 8th in Hampton Beach at Wally's. It's the same day as WrestleMania. How about this? Come see Fozzy early on in the day, and later on the night, watch WrestleMania with me. I will stay at Wally's. Come on down, see Fozzy, and then we'll watch WrestleMania together. You can get all those tickets at FozzyRock.com. And don't forget to join us for the VIP meet and greet, one of the best in the business. Fozzy is one of the best VIP experiences. We do a whole mini set of songs that you're not going to hear later on in the show, songs you will, some classic rock tunes that we all enjoy. We take requests, we play covers, we take pictures, we sign autographs, we meet you, we greet you, we do everything you need. Go to the FozzyRock.com website, FozzyRock.com. Check out the Fozzy VIP meet and greet and get all your tickets there. And also, I am bringing Words of Jericho back to the UK this spring, May 21st in Glasgow, May 22nd in Manchester. Sorry to say that one sold out in 7 hours. 7 hours we sold out in Manchester. May 23rd in London. Get your tickets at Inside the Ropes. Go check that out. It's going to be great. Got lots of stuff coming up. So we'll see you then. In the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah!